You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
With me is Joanne Bainham. Joanne is from Sterling Private Wealth in Cape Town. There's a number of things I want to bring up, and one thing that I don't think we've really covered it very much in one of our many conversations from the past, Joanne, and that's the cryptocurrency market. Now, around about a year ago, Bitcoin, we'll use that as a reference, was around, I think, $60,000-$65,000 a coin. It's now, last evening, went down below 16,000. And I can only feel that what's happened in the last few days with one of the platforms going under and the other one withdrawing its support, this is not the credibility of this particular so-called asset class. Not irreparably, but certainly you're not going to dive back in, are you?
Well, you know, I still can't get my head around this whole concept because it's an exchange that's going bankrupt from what I can see.
Yeah.
And its biggest competitor tried to buy it out and then walked away and said there's too big a black hole. And the founder had sort of people were in awe of him. Even Sequoia, who are incredibly good in the private equity space, have lost a lot of money giving this man money. Not to mention the football player, what's his name, the famous one that's married to the supermodel, Tom Brady, also lost a fortune putting into this platform.
Yeah.
But like, and here's my analogy, if the JSC went to the wall, does that mean your shares are worth nothing? Because if you have an account where you buy and sell crypto on that exchange, why does it mean your cryptos are no longer worth anything? That's just a question I can't get my head around.
Because it's unregulated, you see. That's the point. Whereas the JSC Securities Exchange is backed by insurers, and it's highly regulated and very efficient. Whereas I don't think these regulations apply to crypto platforms or any sort of crypto investment. I'm not sure. I was hoping you might be able to enlighten me.
I think that's the problem. It's the Wild West, right? So nobody knows what the rules are. Because technically, that money should be in your own account. They shouldn't be able to touch it. But from what I also gather, reading between the lines, that the owner of this platform was using clients' money to buy other assets and using it as collateral. So how do you use my money as collateral for something else if I supposedly own my own money? Mm. I mean, that's completely illegal. So I think you're right. It's not controlled. And I think a whole bunch of people thought, wait a minute, if my money's there, maybe it's not there anymore. I better sell and get out as fast as possible.
Yeah.
So I think that's what's led to a lot of the drops in crypto, because people have just been selling. And I think they're just, excuse the expression, they're just more sellers than buyers right now. Yeah. We see it in the stock markets all the time. We're seeing it now in the crypto markets. But there's a bigger issue here. I think a lot of people are questioning whether do these things actually make sense? Because for a currency to be a currency, it can't be volatile. I mean, you can't buy something today and then tomorrow it's cost you 20% more. You know, currencies move by 2 to 3% a day, and that's massive. You can't have this kind of volatility in crypto. Ironically enough, before these falls, crypto was starting to become looking quite stable, almost like it made a bit of sense. And then out of blue, out of nowhere, this happened. And so, yes, a lot of the more lesser well-known cryptocurrencies have taken a big knock. Bitcoin and Ethereum are now also starting to fall. But you've got to look at this and go, if it's not regulated, will somebody pay me out if there's something untoward happening at where I'm holding my money? You can see why people are very nervous, and you can see why it's dropped to, as you say, below $16,000.
Yeah, and the other thing is that there's been so many little schemes that have conned people out of their money. Because it was so tempting, you know. And the private investor, seeing the fall that we've seen, which is, what, 75% in a year, I just think it leaves a very bad taste in the mouth, and I can't see it ever getting back to those levels. I mean, you never say never, but on the other hand, I think that it's capped, because certain people will say, thank goodness it's back at 30,000 or something, I'm going to get out now, because it was 15, 16 a few weeks ago. But I can't even see it get back there. I've been looking at graphs for about 6 months on this thing, and myself and a technical analyst, we both came to the conclusion independently that it's probably going to go to between 10 and 12,000 a coin. So it's still got a way to go, Joanne. Would you put anyone's money in it if they came to you and said, I need 10%?
They've changed legislation. I think that you can actually advise on crypto for clients. Okay. My personal view on it is I don't ever advise on things I don't understand. And if I'm brutally honest, I've never understood crypto.
I
understand the decentralization argument. I understand the argument that saying I don't trust central bankers. I believe they print too much money and I want something that will hold my capital for me, will hold my value. I kind of get that argument. but there's just too many things I don't understand. And for that, I feel like I'm out. I just don't buy it for clients. But I do have clients who hold it. Mm. And our advice to them is never have it more than 2% of your portfolio. That's always been our advice. So if you do have it, you want to speculate, that's what you're doing. You're speculating. And we don't know if you're right or we're right, but not more than 2%. But I do think what's more interesting about it, I think a lot of these schemes, whatever they're going to turn out to be, usually come out the wash when liquidity is leaving markets. And do you remember the famous Warren Buffett's expression, you always see who's naked when the tide goes out?
Yeah.
And now that we're seeing the tide of liquidity leaving the markets, we're starting to see what exactly is happening here. Because another unrelated story to it yesterday, and I don't know if it's unrelated, but the founder of FTX, I think that's what it's called, is also, I think, a major shareholder in Robinhood. You know, the famous market that would buy these meme stocks in 2021 was exchange. And that share price was down 20% yesterday. So a lot of related events to these. We've seen SPACs already this year falling. Those are special purpose vehicles that take your cash and are supposed to buy interesting things with it. We've seen massive falls in those assets. We've seen massive falls in tech companies that aren't generating earnings. And I think crypto is just along with that. It's people saying, you know, what do I actually hold? What is it worth? How do I value it? If I don't know the answer to that, and I know interest rates are rising, why am I holding it? So I think it's a bigger picture story here. I think it's the global economy, liquidity is leaving. I think people are questioning all these assets.
Okay, so leave it alone, in other words. And if you are dead set on having it, just have a tiny percentage in your portfolio and have some fun with it. But basically say, I'm going to lose that 2%. Hopefully not.
Well, though, I do think it's ironic, Lindsay. Somebody said to me prior to these falls this week, well, you know, it's all very well, because I said to them, look, you know, I don't support Bitcoin. I don't buy it for my clients. You know, you're allowed to have some. You can have some. It's your money, but please don't have too much. And they went, well, you know, Meta's down 75%. Yeah. I'm much more comfortable with my Bitcoin. And well, as soon as those words are out of his mouth, Bitcoin sort of did the same thing. So that's not a great analogy. You know, at the end of the day, you want to put money into investments that aren't going to lose you 75%. And if you're looking for inflation hedges, I think there are better assets out there.
There are. And right on cue, 75% down for Meta, just the same as Bitcoin. And there's something else I don't understand. What is the metaverse? Please tell me.
I have no idea. I believe it's when you leave the real world and live in a virtual world and buy virtual properties and buy virtual presence and speak to people that you don't speak to in the real world. Look, I mean, the great news about it, that it doesn't seem to take an off. That maybe people actually enjoy being in the real world after all.
I think the fantasy
of doing this has not worked.
I think he's miscalculated horribly. I mean, there must be applications for it, but if he thinks I'm going to be walking around, I saw some sort of presentation that you had yesterday. He was in some kind of bubble and he's talking to people who pop up on the screen. I don't know if you have to wear one of those goggle sets
or
something.
Yeah, yeah. Oculus. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but I just think, having seen what has been happening to the world over the last 2-3 years, I think we're going to go back to basics, actually. I mean, obviously, the big tech companies will always be there. But I look at the ones that I use every day. We're conducting this interview now on an iPhone. I've had a delivery from Amazon this week with a book, which I'll never read, but it's just nice to get a bit of parcel. Then there's also Google. I use it every single day, 20 times a day at least. I understand those three. And Microsoft, of course, that's another one.
Yes.
But otherwise, I don't know. Metaverse, I've never had a Facebook account. I'm very proud to say that.
Oh, well done.
Yeah. I don't understand it. And I think Mr. Zuckerberg has miscalculated horribly. And I don't know how much money he's lost over the year. I mean, it wasn't realized profits in the first place. But his net worth on paper must have gone down enormously, Joan.
Well, I can only imagine that 75%, that's an obvious stat, right?
Yeah.
But I did see an interesting thing on Amazon today saying Amazon is now the first company, you know, they used to talk about the first company to have a $1 trillion market cap.
Yeah.
You know, those expressions, Apple's the first company to get to $2 trillion and all these sort of things. And the comment on Amazon today was Amazon's the first company to lose $1 trillion.
Gosh.
I mean, it's just insane numbers. But I mean, you know, Meta aside, I do think a lot of these big IT companies, the FANGs, people have realized they're also real world or physical economy type stocks, where if advertising starts to drop, they're going to be impacted by it. There was a time where you bought these companies because their growth was a sure thing. It didn't matter what the economy was doing. You could buy them. It was a sure thing from earnings. And if you look at the number of companies now cutting staff in the IT space, if you look at their earnings forecast being taken down, I think people are saying, well, wait a minute, you know, what kind of PE multiple does that deserve? Now, I'm not saying these companies aren't great companies. I think they are. But what people are now arguing is, what price do you pay? And interestingly enough, a lot of the value managers globally are starting to look for the first time in years at these so-called growth shares because the valuations have come down so much. So to your point, you mentioned, I think, Google or Alphabet. That's probably one of the like top picks you speak to most managers, because everyone knows you can't live without Google. You could pretty much give up Facebook, give up Instagram. There are lots of things you could live without, yes, but Google would be virtually impossible. It's like breathing for a lot of people. So I think there's going to be lots of opportunities in that tech space, but I think there's a realization now, like, fundamentals matter. What's the price I'm paying? You can't just rely on low interest rates to buy these companies anymore. Now you've got to actually do your homework. And some of them will be huge winners. Not all of them are going to be disaster. So we also know Twitter's no longer listed, but that's going to be an interesting stock to watch as well in the future. Who knows, it might come back.
Yeah, it could easily do. I see that, what's his name, Elon Musk, is now insisting that employees work a 40-hour week from the office. There's no more working from home. And he's also, of course, sacked a whole bunch of them, as has Zuckerberg. He's laying off 11,000 people. That's a lot of people. That's a
huge number of people. Mm. No, they are. And I think, look, again, they increased their workforce when interest rates were zero, because they couldn't spend money quickly enough, because that's what the market wanted them to do. But the rhetoric has changed now. And I think we're going in, you know, if you look at the early 2000s and at the end of the tech market, and then for the next couple of years, it was the old economy stocks that did well, the commodity shares, the sort of cheap stocks. I think it feels to me that once the sort of recession that we're kind of expecting is over, I think we're going to see a massive change in leadership in the markets. And one of the areas we really like is sort of base materials, energy stocks. I mean, energy stocks have done well for a long time, but I still think you want to be back into the real world, real economy stocks, and yeah, no longer just relying on tech companies.
Back to basics, in other words, which is exactly what I'm saying. I'm not saying that there's going to be a barter trade instead of currencies, and people are going to start growing wheat and swapping it for sugar or something like that. But I do think it's all gone a little bit too far. But that's me. I'm a Luddite. Talking about Microsoft, I don't know if you noticed, and this is to do with people looking for places to put their money. I mean, you know, mega rich people. Paul Allen, you remember Paul Allen? I think he started Microsoft, didn't he?
Oh, yes. You're talking about his art collection, yes, aren't you? About to announce that. Unbelievable.
He's unbelievable. It was at Sotheby's in New York last night. I mean, I don't know where he kept all these things. I think there was about 7 or 8 paintings that went for between 110 and 150 million US dollars. And that was just the tip of the iceberg. Last night's sale yielded more than 1 billion.
Right.
And there's still more to go tonight. What an incredible man. I know he bought a super yacht when he got out of Microsoft, but I didn't realise he was such an avid art collector, and not rubbish stuff either. I mean, top of the range stuff. Van Gogh, Cezanne, and the list goes on. Monet, Matisse.
Now, where are those paintings going to? I mean, are they going to private hands and... or they're going into museums, or, I mean, because you kind of want the world to see them.
Well, this
where
is the
are
thing.
They going, do you
this
know?
Is the thing, you see, because he was very generous. He would lend them to museums. He had them in a vault or something, obviously, but everyone knew about his collection, and the museum would phone up and say, you know, can we have it for a month for this particular exhibition we've got going? And he would say yes, but they're saying that the sort of prices being paid cannot be afforded by museums, so they're going to private collectors, and those private collectors won't be as magnanimous with their generosity and lending these things out. So a lot of people are saying it's great, but on the other hand, we're going to miss these things, and they're almost certainly going out of circulation, which is sad.
Well, it's such a pity he didn't leave it in his will to those museums and art collections, but he didn't leave it there so they could actually enjoy it. But, you know, that's what it is. And what it also tells me, though, there's still a lot of money sloshing around in the world, and it probably tells me as well that the Fed's still got a lot of work to do, because, you know, unless, of course, it's all the oil guys buying these paintings, because they seem to be the only ones with money at the moment.
Yeah.
With energy prices being done, the only part of the market that's done well this year has been energy. So perhaps they're the big buyers. And I guess we'll never know who actually buys the stuff.
No, it's very
But there clearly is a lot of liquidity in very few hands still.
Yeah.
Yeah. But less than it was.
Okay, so you're going back to basics, but materials and energy, hopefully green energy, not fossil fuels, Joanne. I know you can't avoid them, but have a look
at green
as well.
Okay, I'm somewhat cynical about the ESG space. It feels very sort of regulation and legislation led. And I think ESG keeps changing its spots as to what it stands for. When it started, it was all about exclusion. Now it's about inclusion if you're transitioning. And the cynic in me says the only reason they're saying that is because they want to buy oil companies, otherwise they can't buy them. But equally, even though I'm terribly cynical on the issue, there is a case to be had that not all oil companies are bad. Some of them are trying to transition to a cleaner, better future. And they do have the balance sheets, they do have the know-how, and they do know how to probably go into renewables. They have the kind of capex for it, so why not? So I think buying dirty oil doesn't mean it stays dirty forever, is what I'm saying to you. Mm. And in the meantime, while we transition to the net zero world, we're still going to need oil. And on top of everything else, I think if you want some sort of inflation hedge in your portfolio, buying oil energies makes a lot of sense.
Joanne, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for your insight. That's Joanne Bainham from Sterling Private Wealth in Cape Town. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.